Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Mem Ches, Mitzvah 48, the Mitzvah of Shlo Lahakos of the Aim, do not to strike one's father or mother. Seems like a pretty good idea. But how do we know, in the first place, that it is a prohibition to strike one's father or mother? If we look in the Pasuk in Mishpatim, that's Parakav Aleph, Pasuk Tesvav, chapter 21, the verse 15, it says, Umake aviv v'imo mos yumas, that one who strikes his father or mother shall be put to death. That doesn't exactly tell us about the prohibition. Don't. It's the consequence of being put to death. Chances are we wouldn't have a consequence without a warning, a punishment not to. Really, it's not that hard to imagine that hitting is prohibited. But where do we learn it out from? We learn it out actually from the pasuk talking about the administration of malchus, the administration of lashes, which is an interesting insight into how the Torah views punishment of criminals. The Torah says in Kiseitzayit Perchafhei Pasuk Gimel, chapter 25, verse 3, Arba'im Yakenu Lo Yosef, that he should strike the criminal, the one who has transgressed a law, a negative prohibition, as we've been discussing, that he should strike the criminal 40 times. We actually learn out that it's 39. Lo Yosef, he should not add on. And the pasuk goes on to say that that this could result in his deterioration, in a lack of his health. The truth is that if Beis Din actually makes an assessment each time of how much the perpetrator can handle, and that's how many malchus they give him. They do not give him more than he can handle. However, well, the upper limit is 39. What we see from here is a negative prohibition, an explicit negative prohibition against hitting someone. Now, if Beis Din, who is trying to punish a criminal, is enjoined from not hitting them, is enjoined not to hit them unnecessarily, that means that as soon as the punishment is done, Beis Din is not above the law. Beis Din is not in a special category, nor is this person be below the law or beyond the law. He is still a human being once he's received his punishment. That is it. Therefore the Torah says that Beis Din is bound by the law, by the negative commandment of Lo Yosef. He should not add on to the malchus. Okay, if Beis Din should not be adding on to the malchus, certainly anyone else should not be hitting their fellow unnecessarily. However, normally when one strikes his fellow, it is something that results in a chiyuv mamon, in a monetary payment. Over here in our case, the Torah tells us that one who strikes his parents is liable for the death penalty. Now let's qualify this for a second, and we're talking about a case where someone strikes his or her parents in such a way that it causes blood to flow. That is called a mako, making a wound, inflicting a wound on one's parents. One delivers a blow to one of his parents. Well, it's certainly not the right thing to do, but as long as there is no blood spilled, then the person is not liable for the death penalty. He's only liable for monetary payments. Now, you may not see the blood on the on the outside. Internal bleeding also counts. Even when one even when one gives such a blow that it deafens, that it causes the parents a loss of hearing, we say that that is also included, because in order for there to be a hearing loss, there had to be some bleeding within. One would think certainly if one causes bruising, it would go under this category. Now, we'll get to extenuating circumstances in a moment. Let's first focus, though, on the shoroshim, the essence of this mitzvah, and why it would be such an issue. The Sefer HaChinuch says, "Liyaser hanivolim, to chastise those who are disgusting, v'amosrim, sheherim liyad v'mishavim la'olam, b'rtzon hakel. They have raised a hand against those who have brought them into the world with God's will. V'aslam kamatovos, and did many good things for them. Umelach b'mishpa yamid aretz." The underlying theme which keeps this earth a stable, livable place is that we have to inflict justice on those who have committed, against those who have committed gross injustice. We cannot have lawlessness where, against even one's parents, one is willing to commit a crime that is the ultimate in crime that has to be stopped, nipped in the bud, even though it is not a capital offense, but over here, since one has hit his parents to such an extent that blood has been caused to flow, then that is a gross injustice for all his parents, considering all that his parents have done for him, and this must be punishable by death. This cannot be allowed to happen. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says that that what he has done is, number one, he has shown rov azus, he's shown a lot of brazenness. How can one be so brazen to go and hit his own parents? And also he says, and perhaps connected, Hayoso mafsid seder habayis. He is making lost the order of the house, which is the first, he says, the chela karusha min ha-medina. It's the first part of the way the medina is set up, of the way the country is set up. Is first there has to be order domestically. There has to be a hierarchy and a normal way in which these things go. I remember hearing that Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, the late Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Berlin, once called up a parent and said, "Today, your son said no to me. I asked him to do something, and he said no." Now, this may not seem like a big deal to you. I'm just his teacher. However, I want you to know that today, it's me. Tomorrow, it will be you. And the next day, it will be the Ribbono Shel Olam. It will be God. We have to inculcate in ourselves and in our children a sense of obedience, a sense of duty, a sense of propriety. And this is missing. Rav Shashrafel Hirsch, who attaches value to the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, of honoring one's parents, in that those parents, besides having brought him into the world, are his link in the chain of our Mesorah, are his link in the chain of our transmission from Sinai. We have never seen the sea split. We were not personally taken out of Mitzrayim, much as we try to imagine that we were, and view it as if we were. We were not there. We haven't seen it. The way that we know about it is from our parents, from that chain of transmission. That chain must be honored if we are to serve Hashem. Perhaps he would say here as well that what one is doing by hitting one's one's parents is showing that he has absolutely no value for the chain of for that chain of transmission, and that he views his parents not as the true bearer of that of our precious tradition, our precious mitzvos, our precious heritage, which gives us a link to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but rather just another person, just someone to be struck at, someone to be fought against, like any other human being or less. So, for this reason, he holds that they, for this reason, among others, we can understand when the Torah reacts so severely to one who who strikes his parents. Perhaps with this as well, we can understand the Gemara's exception to this rule. And that exception goes as follows. If the father or mother is not considered osa ma'asa amcha, doing the actions of your nation, what does this mean? We learn out from the pasuk v'nasiba amcha lo sa'ar, that a prince among your nation you should not curse, that where else would a prince come from if not from your nation? What we learn out from here is that is that a prince among your nation means a prince who is acting as one of your nation. Osa ma'asa amcha, he is doing the actions of your nation, meaning he is observant of mitzvos. One who is not observant of mitzvos does not have this particular prohibition. How do we know that this applies to this prohibition as well? The Gemara applies it in Yevamos. The Gemara is talking about a mamzer. The words are really benomi, kol makom, that someone's son from any place. What does it mean, one's son from any place? And the Gemara says this comes to include a mamzer, someone who is born of an illicit relationship, who cannot marry into Klal Yisrael as a result of the way he was born. This person too, says the Gemara, is enjoined from striking his parents. The Gemara asks, well, wait a second. How did this mamzer come into existence? How did he get born if not from his parents doing an illicit act, having relations, two relatives who are not permitted to each other having relations or an act of adultery, would result in producing this mamzer? By definition, the Gemara then says, that means that these parents are not osa ma'asei amcha. They are not people who are acting as Jews should. They're not acting in a way that Jews should act. And why then, the Gemara asks, would any mamzer ever be obligated not to hit his parents, or rather, everyone's obligated not to hit anybody, but rather that he'll be liable to the punishment that results in that results from one hitting his parents and causing a wound. Why would the mamzer ever be subject to that? By definition, the mamzer's parents are lav osa ma'asa amcha, are not acting in the way that our nation should, and therefore he should be exempt. The Gemara answers that we're talking about where the parents did tshuva, where the parents repented, or where the parents in question at least repented and is sorry that they committed that act. At that point, while the kapara is not complete, while the action is still punishable, or at least one must undergo yisurim, one must undergo troubles and trials and tribulations in order to wipe this out, as opposed to the worse consequences that would await him after death. Nevertheless, they are now considered osa maase amcha. They are acting as a Jew should, and therefore, the son faces the consequences of being punished by death if he hits one of these parents. It's interesting to note, I actually saw it at the same time, the Archos Tzadikim gives kind of a matching bookend to this concept. And that is, when we try to provide for our families, he says, we often focus on making more and more and more and more money, or achieving more and more fame, or more and more prestige, but and we tell ourselves that we're doing it for our families. Rav Mordechai Gifter was visiting a wealthy man in Waterbury, and he tried him at his house many, many times, and the man was always at his office. Finally, Rav Gifter made an appointment to see the man in his office. And he asked him, I don't understand. You built this beautiful mansion, stately, with all the great luxuries that you can imagine, in the best of neighborhoods. Why did you build it if you're never there? And he said, what do you mean, Rabbi? I have to provide for my wife and kids. Little did he realize, said Rav Gifter, that the best way of providing for his wife and kids would be to provide himself, to be home. Rav Gifter said, I came here to ask you for a donation. I don't need a donation right now. You've just given me the greatest gift you ever could. You just gave me the greatest insight into how you can rationalize what we do for ourselves and for our children. What is the best thing that we can do for our wives and our children, says the Archos Tzadikim? The best thing we can do for them is become righteous, is become versed in Torah, is become proficient in Ma'asim Tovim and good deeds, is to become holy people and closer to God. This, says the Archos Tzadikim, will give us something to show our children and make them proud of us and inspire them to go in such paths themselves. This is something that we can do for our children. It struck me in the contradistinction to this halacha over here. When one acts in a selfish manner, when one acts in a sinful manner, it is not just that the sin was bad. He actually, God forbid, loses the merit of having his children respect him to the extent where his own child can go up, inflict a wound on him, and not be liable for it in the usual way. What has happened is, it seems that bond has become broken. That bond has become severed. Whether it's that bond with Sinai, that bond with our tradition, the parent has shown that he and she, or she is no longer a link in that chain. They are no longer transmitting these values to their children. If anything, they are doing the opposite. The respect due to those who brought him into the world, that is perhaps less important than the lack of respect that one should have for one who is destroying the world with their averus, with their sins. And we are naturally here talking about people who are sinning willfully, people who know that they're sinning. Most people who do not do mitzvos today are in the category of Tinok Shenishba. The vast majority of people are in this category of Tinok Shenishba. Tinok Shenishba is described in the Gemara. The phrase means a child who had been captured, and the Gemara in many places distinguishes between someone who grew up knowing about the mitzvos, knowing the value of Torah mitzvos, and chooses not to do mitzvos, which is what we're talking about here, and a tinok shenishba, one who, so to speak, was a child taken away in captivity, returns in adulthood and has no idea how to do the mitzvos, even if one sees others doing the mitzvos, to go on and say that, well, since he does not immediately adopt the habits of those who have had 30, 40 years of training, even 20 years of training, and all of a sudden make this his own, that is not accurate. Rather, someone who did not have that education and therefore has a hard time accepting those mitzvos is also in the category of Tinok Shenishba, one who lacked the education, lacks the background, lacks the appreciation, and therefore is not doing the mitzvos for that reason. That is not what we are discussing here. Those people are Osam Masei Amcha. They are trying their best to do what they can, whether they are completely Shomer Shabbos, whether they are coming to Shul twice a year because it's all that they know. That's not what we mean over here. What we mean is someone who willfully does Averos, and someone who has not repented. Someone who feels that these Averos are fine, and they have not left them. They have not left these averos. They have not abandoned the practice of doing these averos. Those types of people are not osa masa amcha and are not deserving of their children's respect in this way. To the extent that a child, not saying that it's a recommended thing to do, but that this punishment, which results from a child hitting his parent, no longer applies. The disruption of societal order, the break in the link of the chain to Sinai, the azus, the brazenness that it takes, is no longer present if a parent has severed him or herself and continues to sever themselves from the Maase Amcha, from the way that Jews should act. There's something to keep in mind, as my elementary school principal, Rabbi Schwartz, used to say, the parents should get nachas from their children, and the children should get nachas from their parents. We have a big responsibility as parents to make sure that we are a source of honor and pride to our children, and not, God forbid, the other way. A couple more qualifications about this concept of Eino Osa Mas Amcha, of a parent who is not acting as a Jew properly should. Number one is that Rashi says that this mitzvah that the parent has transgressed is a mitzvah which has misa. A mitzvah which is punishable in death. Now, this happens to be the case in Yuvamos, in the Gemara that we quoted, because we're talking about a mamzer, someone born of an illicit union, where the only punishment that there is death, either by Beis Din or Karis, or untimely death through the hands of Shemayim. The question is, what about other averos that the parent transgressed? You could say that Rashi said that it has misa, that it's an avera which involves death, meaning it's limited only to that. However, The in Bav Metzia, when we're talking about a para of ribis, we're talking about a cow gotten through usury, through lending with interest. The Gemara also says that is Eino Osa Masa Amcha. The person is not Osa Masa Amcha because he's not acting as a Jew should, because he's lent with interest. The Minchas Chinuch leaves it as a question as to whether one would be liable for hitting his parents who had willfully transgressed a lesser Avera, but not done Shuva for it. Now, we had spoken up until now about the punishment for striking them. There's certainly no reason to strike a person just willfully. What about if Bezdin asks him to strike his parent? The Rif and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say that he is not permitted. Tosfos says that under such circumstances where he's asked to by Beis Din, he is permitted. Again, as soon as they repent, then he is once again liable. They have rejoined the group of Klal Yisrael in the transmission of the mitzvos, and he owes them the utmost honor. What about the case of a doctor? If a doctor does surgery on his parent, is that a problem? The Rambam says, in Ein Shom Acher, if there is no one else there, then he can perform the surgery. If there's no one else who can do it. The question is, does the father have to consent? Let's say the father does not want this operation done. The son is aware that this is necessary for the father's health to do. Can the son forcibly do surgery on his father? The Minchas Chinuch says that absolutely the son can do surgery on his father if it is for the sake of healing. And on the contrary, it is a mitzvah to do, even against the father's will. It does seem, however, that if there is another surgeon, probably one who is as qualified, then the other surgeon should do it, rather than the son inflicting a wound on his own father. Some other exceptions include, if one strikes his father after death, he strikes his father's corpse, inflicts a wound on his father's corpse, well, that is not permitted. But nevertheless, he is not liable. As we said before, if he hits him on his ear and causes a loss of hearing, he is liable because there must be internal bleeding. One who is a doctor, as we said before, is not liable. However, one should try to get another doctor to do it. A Shisuki, one who we are not sure who his father is. The reason that he's called a Shisuki, Shosak means to be quiet, and is when he asks, who's my father, they say, shh. They are Mishaskino, so they don't tell him. In that case, though, we are tentatively have an idea who the father is, since it is not a certain thing, then we are then according to most versions, he is liable only for having hit his mother, not his father. A ger, a convert, who was born not as a Jew, and has no relationship, he's not officially related to his parents, he is not liable. However, midrabbanan. The rabbanan said that a ger convert should not hit his father and presumably mother, who is a non-Jew. Midrabbanan, it is not a fine way to act. It is not certainly not the midos, not the attributes that we want to encourage in Klal Yisrael. Someone whose father and mother were complete rishayim. We said that completely wicked. We said that he's not liable until they do tshuva. However, one cannot hit them unless commanded by Beis Din. As we said before, according to the Rif and the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to Tosfos, even when Beis Din wants to appoint the son to hit the father, this cannot be done even if the father is Eino Osamas Amcha, even if the father at the moment is a sinner who has not repented. This cannot be done, except in the case of a Mesis, one who has tried to convince someone else to, one who tries to convince someone else, even one's close relative, to serve Avodah Zarah, to serve other idols. It's a special punishment that we say lo sachmo v'lo sechase olav, that one cannot have mercy or pity on this person, no matter who they are, one who has tried to incite someone else to commit idolatry, a mesis, has special halachos, has a more severe case of punishment, and therefore even the Rif and the Rambam would agree that Beis Din can make the son a shliach, can make the son an agent to inflict punishment upon the father. This, according to most, is where the father has not done tshuva, where the father has not repented. Now, what do you mean? If he's a mesis, if he has incited someone to do avodah zarah, he should be killed. Nevertheless, as he's going out to be killed, as even though he may be killed, still there is a debate whether he is allowed to be hit if he has not done tshuva. If he has not repented, then it's clear that he can be hit. If he has repented, it is a question among the Rishonim as to whether one can strike him. This avera of striking one's parents applies in all times. It applies to men, women, whether they are recognizable as such, or whether they're a totum or androgynous, whether they are not recognizable as not determinable, their gender is not able to be determined, it doesn't matter. They are both obligated in this not to strike their parents. The punishment is chenek, is strangulation. If one did not inflict a wound, meaning that one did not cause any bleeding, then they are obligated to pay. If they are getting misa, if they are being put to death, then they are not obligated to pay, even though normally one would. But we say that we do not inflict two punishments on the same individual. And therefore, once one is getting misa, one is getting the death penalty, or malchus, or lashes, one is exempt from paying, assuming that the payment and the punishment stem from the same action. There is a long discussion in the Gemara Ksuvos about the ramifications of where this law of, so to speak, double jeopardy applies. Let us all strive to honor our parents in the best way possible and recognize that they are indeed the most deserving recipients on this earth of our honor. And let us, on the other hand, try certainly not to be a dishonor to our children, but rather an honor to our children, a source of pride to them, and a strong link in the chain that we are transmitting to them all the way from Har Sinai.